flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Bull & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bullandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into Friday on TGS. Dave's out today. Back on Monday. Rachel, Andrew, yours truly. Hey, I didn't do myself in the third person.
Wheels.
I didn't do it in the third person this time.
It's wheels.
I always made fun of people that do that, and then I did it, and I'm like, oh, I get it now, to a degree. I don't do it on purpose. I think other people do it on purpose.
It kind of works when you do it because you have an effective nickname, right?
Yeah.
Like wheels is...
Yeah, what if I wanted like a really cool like nickname that didn't really fit me?
Well, if you were like Rage Andrew and Dr. Badass here, like that wouldn't really work. But Wheels, I think, is effective.
I kind of want to go Dr. Badass now.
Want to do Dr. Badass? We can try it.
I'm not doing that.
What's my PhD in badassery?
Badassery, yeah, I think that goes without saying.
Raj and Amy are abandoning us. Not really. They were on
abandoned.
Remote today. Did you guys see the pictures from SLU? They were over at the building.
Yes, I did.
They had Robbie Avila there joining them, and I tweeted that I think if you put a hat on Robbie, then he could be Ranji's much bigger little brother. There's a lot of similarity in their looks.
It's rare that someone towers over Ranj, because Ranj is a pretty tall guy.
Yeah, I think Ranj said he was like 6'1". Robbie's 6'9", so yeah. it's a little different.
Don't let him get away with it. Chris could be his dad. Chris is old.
No,
Chris
could be his father. But it would be a push. Like, it would be really close. Although it's probably a little bit less of a push, right? Like, it's probably a 20-ish year, 23, 24-year gap, right? Ranj's mid-40s?
Ranj's 47.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, then he could easily be there.
That's what I said. He'd be like, he could be, he was like 26 years old.
True. I got to change that now to Ranj. He could be Ranji's son. Maybe that's Ranji's Chicago son.
Whoa.
What? Because Robbie's from Chicago. But Robbie is from Chicago.
Dude.
All right, I got to stop this because I'm going to get in trouble. I'm going to get in trouble because Ranji's secret family up there. And the familial look.
If he does have a secret family... It's really bad that he chooses to spend all his time with us. You know what I mean? Like, it would make more sense if he was spending 2 days a week here.
Yeah.
Go hang out with your wife, man.
You never know, though, man. It could be that kind of arrangement.
Maybe.
You know, you hear ball players, like all the retired baseball players, when they're retiring, or athletes, they're retiring, the first thing they joke is that their wife's going to want to kick them out of the house because they're used to them not being around and not annoying them. Maybe that's Ranji's. You know?
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah, but they look like they had fun. Obviously, you guys, a big game over at SLU today. They're taking on Dayton at Chaffetz Arena tonight. It's going to be a blizzard, which means everybody's going to be wearing white. I think they'll have the white flags out tonight, too. Should be a great atmosphere after they beat Virginia Commonwealth VCU the other night. And as far as A-10 regular season games go, it doesn't get any bigger than this week. VCU and Dayton are the top two teams. The Billikens are right there behind them and with them, really kind of in conference play. So a win today would be a really big deal for seeding for the A-10 tournament. So looking forward to seeing how that plays out at Chaffetz Arena tonight. There was something else that I wanted to bring up related to their... When's the last time you guys have been on a college campus? Ranj and Amy being at SLU today made me think of this.
Back in late October because I was interviewing students about the election.
So you were on the campus there.
Yeah.
What was it like to you just observing?
It was interesting. I mean, it was it was cool, like, being around all the youngins.
I laugh when you guys say that because you're barely older than, well, not barely, but a decade older than some of them.
I'm there like, hello, fellow kids. Am I blending in? No, it was cool. It was chill.
Yeah.
It wasn't too campusy. I mean, SLU is like in the middle of St.
It's a
Louis.
City campus. Yeah, it's
so
different.
It was a little different thing. Yeah. I've never been to like a big, like a state university.
Oh, like Mizzou?
I've never been to Mizzou.
Ooh, we could go. We should all go road trip to Columbia.
What would we do at Mizzou?
Well, I mean, you have to go for an event.
I ain't going
right?
to school.
No, you go for an event, right? You go to a basketball game, you go to a football game, or I mean, not that I would drag you guys to a college baseball game, but like there are things you could
go
to gymnastics. There are all kinds of things we could go to do, but then you just experience the college town. You go get some burgers, you go to Booch's, or you go, get pizzas or whatever.
What's a Booch?
It's a burger.
Oh, okay.
They're good.
Oh.
I've not been to Columbia.
I had the same question, Ray. Yeah, I was like, no, oh, no,
it's
booches.
A burger. It's a burger place.
Cool.
It's a burger place. Can't even say it.
I'd love to get a booch, I think.
He's like, is that legal?
Sounds tasty.
Yeah. I've only been to Mizzou a few times. Strangely, you would think I would have been there more, as a sports guy living 90 minutes from there. But I've been there to, like, coach, like, junior, like, you know, 14-year-olds. I'm playing in and around campus. I've been there to take my kid for a visit. She did a program on campus there in junior high, like part of the summer for a couple of weeks. And I've been there for basketball the games and football games and things like that. And that's where my experience is in Columbia. Andrew, when's the last time you've been on a campus?
Golly gee willikers. I don't even remember.
Was it when you were in college?
Time. Maybe so.
Yeah.
I have not, you know, I didn't go to a real college. I went to community college. So
I mean, it's still people walking around doing their thing.
Yeah, I guess kind of sort of. I went to for real colleges. I went to visit some friends at U of I in like maybe 2009. And that might be like the only time I've really visited like a traditional university, you know, college town, you know, up in like Champaign, Urbana. It was really something. It's really incredible how I was really taken by like how it's like its own little, it's its own little city. It's its own little community.
Yeah,
up there.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the schools are so it's the, and when I was listening to Ron and Amy today, obviously, you know, they're in the middle of campus. It's interesting to me that I've been on campuses quite a bit. Mostly around the summer for coaching, but also for my kid. My kid's at North Carolina, so we were in Chapel Hill last spring. Been to Alabama many times during her time there. Obviously, I mentioned Mizzou. I've been around the University of Michigan, which is not so much on campus because the city is, like, City of Ann Arbor is basically the campus. Like, it's all mixed together, which is what Andrew's talking about. Mm-hmm. Chapel Hill's like that. But what's interesting to me was... it didn't look like life on a campus was any different than it was when I was in school.
Hmm.
It was just a bunch of people, college aged, just walking around, books and backpacks, carrying books, drinking coffees, eating foods. Like, just like, it didn't look any different to me than it did when I was at Miami. And at Miami, it's a little different world because it's a small campus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, there's no city streets going through it. It's a closed campus. You can't drive through campus. There are a lot of different outside points where you can get to the campus and park and walk, but there's nothing going through it. You're not going through it east, west, north, south. There's no thoroughfare. So it's not intermingled with the city, which is different than a lot of the schools. It's, you know, Mizzou is not like that. I'm sure KU is more like Mizzou and Michigan and these big campuses. But just in general, it looked no different to me.
Nice.
Except that everybody seemed like a child. When I was in college, everybody seemed like they were grown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're walking around like, I'm surrounded by other adults. Like, sure you are, buddy.
When I was at SLU, I agree with you, Wheels. It was very similar to when I was in college. It was just like, yeah, people are just walking around doing their thing. But I was approaching students because, you know, supposedly this is going to be like one of their first times.
Right.
And I asked one guy, I was like, oh, do you have time to talk to KMOX and blah, blah, blah. He was like, no. And also, I'm 35. I work here. Like, but I was like, but I'm looking at him as my peer. I'm like,
right.
We're young enough to still be in school, obviously. It was a very delusional moment for me.
You're like, well, you know, you and I, we're on the same page. We're both college students, right?
We belong here.
Have you guys hit the age yet where you think people that are that age look way too young?
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, very much.
Yes. I can't remember what age I was when I started thinking that.
I can tell you when it was.
But I know now I looked at you know, 18, 19, I'm like, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. I was probably about 24, 25, and I realized that SIUE's campus has a Chick-fil-A on it. And this was when it was kind of hard to find a Chick-fil-A in the area. There wasn't the one in Florissant yet. There wasn't the one in Edwardsville yet. So in my area, it's tough to find one. So SIUE's campus had a Chick-fil-A in the dining hall. And the dining hall is just open to anybody. You can just go. You don't have to be a student to eat there. And so a buddy of mine, we went and ate at that Chick-fil-A. And boy, howdy, did we look incredibly out of place. Did we look like the two most mid-20s guys on earth who definitely were not like, you know, 19-year-old college sophomores. Yeah. And that was the first time I remember feeling bad about age and just being like, yeah. Oh no.
Actually, you know, now that I think about it, I know
they don't
exactly
fit in at all.
Now that I've been thinking about it, I remember exactly when that line happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because it's when my sister was that age.
Okay.
When my little sister was like 17, 18, going and then, you know, getting ready to go to college, I was like, oh my God, they're all babies.
Yeah.
And so my sister's 18 years younger than me. So I would have been early 40s when I first had that realization. My sister's like your guys' age. About that. Something like that. So I would have thought you guys were babies at that same time too.
For me, a lot of it is working with younger people here.
Yeah.
They're all great, but then sometimes it's like a little micro communication will happen and I'm like, oh, they look at me as an old person.
Yeah.
And then it kind of like snaps me back into reality. Like, oh, they don't want to like
peers.
Hang out. Like they think I'm like an old lady.
Yeah, we're tough. Not peers. They think I'm their aunt.
Right. Exactly. So yeah. Then it's like, okay, well, reality is setting in.
Yeah. No, that's for sure.
Yeah, they all call me Unk.
And it was interesting when I first came to KMOX. So it would have been 2006, August of 2006. I was just stunned that I was surrounded by other grown-ups all the time, like people older than me all the time. I had worked in nothing but a sports talk radio network from the time I got out of college until that point. And there were days where I was 26 years old and I was the oldest person in the building on a given, you know, at an overnight or whatever, when there's only like eight people
that
in the building.
That sounds very chaotic at a radio station.
Yeah, it was all chaos on that stuff. And like there were grown-ups that worked there, but they were really only there like Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, right? The bosses, like even for a long time, my program director was my age. Like, we were peers. We came in together around the same time. He might have been there a year or two before me, but he went up the production and then eventually the management side, and I went up on the on-air side. So there was that, but, like, you know, the big bosses were all grown people. Everybody in, like, affiliate relations and sales and all, they were all grown people, but then, like, all the rest of us were, like, children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about it now, like, all the guys that I worked with who I thought were old, they were probably like 35.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking at it now, like, man, those guys are still around. They're still doing shows. And I look at them on Twitter. I'm like, well, he's not that. They're not much older than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I thought, oh, that's a grown-up. I'm just a kid. They're grown-ups. It's really odd to have that perspective. When you first start to realize, like, oh, I'm not the kids anymore.
Yeah, time is slipping through my fingers.
And
there's
and
something I can do.
For you guys, like even now, it's a little different than it was here like 15 years ago, where a lot of the people that were the veterans, the grown-ups, the people who have been around for a while, gradually over time, you know, they have retired or they have moved on. And it's a little bit even younger now than it would have been then. And that's even now when you walk around, it's like we're grown-ups. It's a professional workplace, unlike sports radio stations and other places that I've worked where it's just like a zoo. It's like babysitting. You know, I mean, I'm telling you, man, I felt bad for some of the grown-ups at our sports network because they were just babysitting all of us. I mean, just ridiculous. Like, you think about pranks and things. It was nonstop. It never stopped. It was all day, every day. People getting on the overhead speaker in the office by using, because you could use the phone and you would press like *8 or whatever, and you could just page anybody in the building, and it was not great. And when there were clients in the building, they would send out messages or post a sign basically saying, please don't go on the intercom today because we have clients in the building.
Please don't lose this sale for us.
I'm not going to do them because all of them would be getting us in trouble if I did them on the air, but it was always paging. So basically, like out of The Simpsons, that kind of thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Amanda hug and kiss.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That kind of thing, but worse. A whole lot.
Someone please give me Amanda hug and kiss.
Whole lot worse than that. Man, I almost said one of them, and I'm just not going to.
Yeah, just don't.
Because they're funny, but like...
They're great.
They're worth the risk.
They're very funny.
Yeah,
but,
this is definitely not worth the risk. All right, it's TGS on a Friday. Dave, just out for the day. Stuff to do. Normal day-to-day life stuff. Nothing wrong, not sick, nothing going on terribly. Just stuff you got to do in life sometimes. Dave will be back on Monday as usual. Rachel's here. Andrew's here. I'm here. And obviously, we got friends joining us all throughout the show. Matt Pauly will join us after the news at 1:30. Bernie Miklas will be at 4 o'clock. Brad Young is going to join us. We got Dave Murray. So we'll be all over the place today. Some serious stuff. Probably more just Friday.
That's
fast food news and sports and things along those lines. But we are, and I don't have anything in front of me at this moment that's brand new about the crash in D.C., but there are kind of press avails throughout the course of the day and updates. So if we hear anything that advances the story and is significant, we'll definitely bring that to you as well. A few things. We'll hit some city politics, too, with Brad Young. They had a hearing today that got shut down on the Rams money.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Sean Malone was tweeting about it. He was there. And they were going through the process of processing the bill and whether or not they were going to go with the amended version versus the original version. And there was a little bit of a back and forth. And near the end, like right at the end of it, I guess Megan Green just shut it all down. And said, we'll reconvene on Tuesday, and said, if you want to play games, we'll play games. So I wasn't following it that closely because I just wanted to hear the result, right? I just want to hear what the end of it is. I'm not that into the back and forth on it, but Sean has it, and I'm sure it's on KMOX.com, KMOX News. And if you go onto KMOX News on Twitter or you find Sean's handle, it's all kind of there, just kind of laying it out. And Sean is SMalone27. If you want to follow him on Twitter, does a phenomenal job a lot. But here's what he tweeted. He went through. There's a thread that he was kind of just letting everybody know how this was playing out as he was attending the St. Louis Board of Aldermen meeting today. And the ending of it was the surprise part. And here's how Sean tweeted it. So he tweeted this about an hour ago. He said, shocker. Green, speaking of Megan Green, puts the board in recess till Tuesday at 10. The aldermen are in disbelief as she's walking off the floor. She says, you want to play games? We'll play games.
I'm excited to learn why she said, what games were being played.
Well, it sounded like, and again, I read Sean's thread and I was loosely following this while I was doing a bunch of other things. It sounds like there was support for the old bill that was not the new compromise bill.
Okay.
To spend the money, and that might have been gaining momentum to overtake the amended version, the compromise version that we had just heard about here recently. Mm-hmm. And apparently that is problematic. And the voting on it was 11-4 to push the old one onto the floor for debate along with the newer one. So I don't know. My read on it was, and I could be completely wrong on this because I'm terrible when it comes to the details of city politics. I understand the bigger picture like you were talking about. I want to hear what they're doing, but I'm not as into the mechanics and all of that stuff. But basically, it sounded like there was maybe going to be going back to the old version of this rather than the newer compromise version, and that may have been gaining momentum, so it was like, all right, we're going to shut it down and try to regain control over all this.
You just hit on something that I really relate to as far as, I want to understand more about city politics. Sometimes it feels like we're intentionally being left in the dark by the way the folks who are involved talk about these things. Because they use such charged language. For example, Megan Green saying, oh, if you want to play games, we'll play games, and shutting down the meeting. Well, that's just not really striking at whatever the actual issue is, right? Just lay out what's actually going on. But there's so much chatter on Twitter, and there's so much if you know, you know, and if you don't, you don't. And I feel like I'm one of those people who's just on the outside, can someone explain what's going on here? Which is why it's great to have the KMOX newsroom to break down these things, but... I don't know. Sometimes with the city government, it just feels like we're handling it. You guys don't worry your pretty little heads too much about it.
Yeah. I mean, again, I It's just there's just so much to it because a lot of it is not it's not always just the big stuff that you're fully aware of. There's just right. like day-to-day things that are
there's
involved.
There's a lot of drama. Like there's an insane amount of drama that goes on.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'd be interesting to follow this, and I may run out and talk to Sean a little bit during one of the breaks just to get a little bit better view on that. But that was happening earlier, which is fun. We just have too much drama in everything, don't we? Like,
we
just
do.
In general, we got too much politics. Mm-hmm. Too much drama in D.C., too much drama in Jeff City, too much drama in the city. It feels like everything that's supposed to be organized and simply there to be a mechanism to make sure that things are getting taken care of has just become drama.
Well, I think that's fully intentional because then you can distract from what's actually going on and you can kind of control the narrative with the drama and everyone's distracted by, oh, did you hear what they said? Did you hear what's going on? And then moves can be made like kind of in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I'm not a fan of the like, boy, so I don't want to get off on a tangent. I want to stay focused on this line because there's a lot that I don't like about the entire political process, but it is very clear that the primary missions of each of these jobs held by elected officials from cities and counties to states and to the federal government, that people are losing sight of the job that they have.
Yeah.
And they're all trying to grab bigger and go bigger and be something more than what that job is.
Yeah.
Like we're trying to solve big societal problems on a citywide or a countywide level. We're fighting big national political identity culture war type stuff at like library councils.
Right.
On library boards. Like, what are we doing?
We're getting lost.
Like, do the job, provide the service. Fix the damn potholes, which, by the way, I have another thing about. I'm so tired of wrecking my car downtown. I am so tired of, like, even going 20 miles an hour, you're like, you can't help but just jack your car up as you're going down Tucker. Like, fix those things. And then when all of the stuff that is just supposed to be routine maintenance is good, then we can expand on that.
Yeah.
Then we can start to do more. And that's happening at every level. City, county, state, and obviously federal. Do your job first. And when everything's rolling, then we can start getting into the other stuff. That's DGS on KMOX. Dave out today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The rest of us are here, minus Ron and Amy. They were on remote today at St. Louis University in advance of the Billikens game tonight, which is, by the way, 6 o'clock here on KMOX. And a big game. Taking on Dayton after beating VCU at home earlier this week. So shaping up to be a potentially really big week. Those were the two top teams in the A-10 coming into the week. And obviously the Billikens have been right there kind of on their heels in conference play. They're not necessarily in the same position in terms of national profile and things along those lines because they had a tough non-conference run there. But if you look at the conference standings in the A-10 right now, Dayton is right there behind the Billikens, although they're a really quality team. VCU is tied with the Billikens. George Mason is the top team at 7-1 in conference play, but obviously a big game coming up tonight. And we can talk a little bit about that with our buddy Matt Pauly, who's joining us here on a Friday. Matt, you don't have a show tonight because of that, so we figured we needed to put you to work today.
Well, here I am, ready to carry my weight.
Yeah. You know, this is... I don't know if you saw the pictures earlier, but I mentioned Naranj and Amy were at SLU, and they had Robbie Avila there on at the broadcast location with him. He could be related to Naranj.
Yeah, I saw that tweet from you. That was really funny. That was good.
Just got to get a hat on Robbie next time.
I had never seen that before. I also think Ron kind of looks in a way when he's wearing a hat. Timothy Olyphant.
Yeah, he got a little bit of that. Yeah, a little bit of that.
I guess a lot of people look like Ronge.
Yeah, that's true. Ronge has a look that is, I wouldn't say they all look alike, but the when you're just looking at it at a glance, right, when you just kind of you get the impression, because there's a very specific look. Like, people will look at me and like, Ronald McDonald. And
I don't know about that.
I'm just kidding. It's always Danny Bonaducci. Guys don't even know who that is. No, it's a joke, because everybody just knows there's like five redheads. There's like Ron Howard, there's Ralph Malph. I get the Ralph Malph every once in a while. In fact, my buddy, one of my best friends, sent me a picture, an actual like headshot photograph of Ralph Malph, of Donnie Most. And he had fake signed it to me as Donnie Most, and it was really funny. I'm like, oh my God. But anyway, so just in general, kind of the general visage, that would be correct. Should be a fun game tonight, man. It's going to be a great environment. I know if it's not all sellout, it's damn close to it. They're doing the blizzard tonight. Should be a blast.
Yeah, yesterday there was less than 100 tickets remaining, so I have not heard an update since then, but very limited seating available. You would think it's going to end up being a sellout, and that's great. I talk about this all the time. SLU basketball, that's like the sport in St. Louis that it's kind of the who's who that shows up to games when they're playing well, and that's the thing that people want to talk about. It's got a very unique spot in the St. Louis, the fabric of St. Louis sports, and it just makes everything better when they're playing games that matter and people are talking about it. So they had a great win earlier this week against VCU. Now let's see if they can do that tonight. Hopefully Chaffetz really, really loud, and this continues to get them going. But I said this about the VCU game. Now I'll follow that up tonight. This is the most important game that has been coached by Josh Schertz in his very short tenure as the head coach of the Bills.
It tends to be how it goes, right? The further you go, the more important the games get. And, you know, this is a good test. Dayton's only 4-4 in conference, but they're better than that. You know, their overall profile is better than that.
And they're a named team, Kevin. Yes. Like, that's the other side of this. With all due respect to various members of the Atlantic 10 Conference, there's only a few of them that are kind of named teams, and Dayton absolutely is one of them.
All right, let's hit some baseball and some Blues. We'll start with the baseball side of it, even though nothing's really happened. It's kind of why I wanted to bring it up, because you and Bernie had the Gas House Gang today, episode 61, by the way. So we're just absolutely trucking along on the Gas House Gang. You can find it everywhere on all of the KMOX Sports social media outlets, Twitter, Facebook, the KMOX Sports YouTube page. Go hit subscribe, because then you can get it every day at noon with either all four of us, you, me, Bernie, and Tom, or some combination of us the rest of the week, but it's all four of us on Mondays. You guys talked a bit about the reset and whether or not it's actually even really happening yet.
It's happening at the player development level. It is not happening at the major league level. They let some contracts go, and, you know, Paul Goldschmidt walked. They did not pick up options on Lance Lynn or Kyle Gibson, but that's not a reset. That's just the normal cyclical nature of Major League Baseball, and rosters changing from one year to the next. So they have yet to really get into the reset. You compare, and part of it is because Wilson Contreras was injured last year, so that gave more opportunities to Herrera and Páez. Part of it's because Sejacy got the opportunity late in the season, but really, as it sits right now, there is nobody on the big league roster for this year, especially from a position player standpoint, that didn't get a legit opportunity last year. Even a Jordan Walker, he got an opportunity. Now, he didn't do enough with it, so he got sent down. But they don't have anybody that is just like this guy who doesn't, you know, is going to be making his major league debut.
I will say, to me, where the reset is really happening the most, because you and I have talked about it. I heard you guys, you and Bernie, today. It's dead on. I mean, it's largely the same group as last year, which makes the messaging hard for some parts of the fan base, because the fan base is hearing reset, but they're not seeing it with a transformation of the major league roster. It's just minor tweaks around the edges for now. I mean, it doesn't mean that Arenado won't move. It doesn't mean that later in the year they don't trade Sonny Gray to a contender, things along those lines. But for now, it doesn't look like that. But where the reset's happening are in two places. And one you mentioned already, which is in player development. You're getting all new people in charge of that, new vision, new ideas. Obviously, you know, we've talked a lot about upgrading technology and all those levels. We're not going to see any of that. It's just going to be there as you go. But the one area, this is what makes fans mad, and it's partly why I want to bring it up, but the one area where we are getting the reset, and I think this might be more critical than even opportunities for players in 2025, they're resetting the payroll. And I know that nobody wants to hear about reducing payroll, but if you're doing this now, so last year the Cardinals had the highest payroll in team history, if I'm not mistaken. Like the salary, the luxury tax number was over $200 million. It's about $145, $150 now, and when you look at what's coming up, you know, 17 and a half coming off the books with Miles Mikolas at the end of the year. Let's call it 18. 12 and a half with Steven Matz. So between those two, $30 million coming off the books at the end of the year. Eric Fetty is 7.5. Ryan Helsley is 8. So between those four guys, that's another $45 million coming off the books in addition to the 50 or 60 that's already come off this year. The reset there is opening that up for Chaim Bloom to do with it what he wants to do with it.
And a desire to move Nolan Arenado, and some money will go.
And that would save money. And if you move Sonny Gray at some point, if it's an if, right. But if you did, that's another big chunk. But the whole point is the reset is basically clearing the deck for the new guy to enact his vision of what this should look like.
Give Chaim the blank canvas and let him go to work and let him make this team his as quickly as possible. I think that's a really powerful and really important thing that is not being talked about much. And hopefully the Cardinals do return to spending to where they've spent before. Now, I also will say this. I don't look so much at the overall number. I look at more of the ranking. So I've never had a problem with the Cardinals' payroll number. Like what they spent last year is perfectly fine, and you can win spending that amount of money if you spend it the right way. The one area where the payroll has been falling back has been ranking, comparing them to other major league teams. So we'll see what happens with that moving forward. But I do think that this team fully intends to return their major league payroll back to where it was previously once they're ready to compete at a high level again.
And they've even hinted at that, right? Not necessarily said it outright, but they've basically said, "Well, look, we get through all of this. We sort out what we have. We get more of a handle on the long-term picture on local TV. I don't know why I said it like that. TV.
TV.
On your TV. But on the television deal, and you have a better opportunity. Because I do think, Matt, that they will get back to where they were just at. But I wouldn't do it in one off season. I wouldn't be like, all right, decks are cleared. Let's go spend $140 million right now. I think that, again, you gradually build that up. In addition to having the player development system revamped a little bit. So when you see guys like Quinn Matthews showing up and J.J. Weatherhold, maybe Tink Hentz, and I'm between now and the end of 2026, you're going to see all those guys. And you also have the number five pick this year. So between those things and then maybe being a little more selectively aggressive in free agency, Matt, because I'll tell you, if Vlad Guerrero Jr. hits free agency next year, that's the kind of guy you should make a run at.
Yeah, would you rather go spend $22, $23 million on the combination of Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson, or would you rather go spend $22, $23 million on a guy who is a legit all-star caliber player? And that number is not probably going to get...
No, that number is more of a number two starter, but yeah.
Right. But that's the point that I'm trying to make. Go fill the middle level and the back end of the roster spots with guys from your own organization that can play at a pretty high level. And then when you have those needs and or when opportunities present themselves to improve your team in a profound way, have that money available because you're not spending it on your number four starter.
Right. You're not spending on the fringes. You're spending at the top end, and then you're filling everything up, which, again, used to be the model the Cardinals had. When you had Albert and Waino and Carpenter and Yachty, those guys were all big stars making big money, and they were supported. Bernie really laid this out well yesterday when the two of us were on the Gas House Gang. Like, you supported that with all of those guys from within, with Carlos Martinez and Michael Wacha and Lance Lynn and Shelby Miller and John Jay and Alan Craig and Daniel Descalzo, right? Like, that worked. We know that works. And I think resetting to get back to that is obviously what we're all hoping to see. Real quick on the Blues, Matt. The Blues and the Cardinals are in very similar situations. You got an outgoing executive in charge of the roster, right? Mo is in his last year. Doug Armstrong is winding down the clock in advance of turning the reins over to Alex Steen. Both teams are kind of caught in the middle, right? Neither team is terrible. The Blues aren't terrible. They're just mediocre. You know, they're a 500-ish team. You know, and over the last 2.5 years, it's been kind of like when you add it all up, on a points percentage, you're basically getting 50% of the points available to you at any given time. The difference, obviously, is the Blues have a salary cap that they're up against. They got a little break on that with Brendan Saad just being willing to cancel his deal. But then you also got some news today that the salary cap in the NHL is going to be going up significantly over the next 3 years in gradual kind of step-by-step form. So that may loosen things up a little bit, but keep in mind that also will probably raise the prices for some of the key free agents.
Yeah, and by the way, Saad looks like he's going to sign a deal with the Vegas Golden Knights.
There you go.
The report here recently.
Good for him.
He's going to get another NHL deal here pretty darn quickly.
Yeah, I think he kind of knew that when he made his decision, right?
he doesn't leave $5 million on the table
right.
unless his agent tells him, hey, there's
going
to be
something
some interest
for you. Yeah.
If you don't want to go play for the Springfield Thunderbirds.
Right.
They're the Thunderbirds, right? Do I have that right? Yeah.
Sure.
I think so. Anyways.
Sounds right to me, Matt.
Okay, thank you. So... the salary cap going up is a really good thing for the Blues because they, like most teams, are kind of in cap hell. And there's not, and it's better now than it was in previous years, but it's still not great. And I think we continue to see that this team has some very obvious flaws connected to some of the higher paid players on the team. They're just not finding that next level as a team with this core group. So you got to have some wiggle room to be able to make some changes. I think this is a really key period here moving forward. They, you know, it was a little bit of a come to Jesus here over the last few days with the, you know, the decisions that were made. It feels like we're at a bit of a crossroads for this team, and if they don't show some level of consistency between now and the end of the season, I think Doug Armstrong and company have some really tough decisions to make on if the guys on the roster right now are the guys that you want leading you forward. And again, if you've got some more cap room, that's going to maybe make some of those tough decisions a little bit easier to navigate through.
Yeah, it's still hard because as I put it this way yesterday, I think you agree, but you just have too many veteran players on bad contracts, and it's hard for them to lead when they can't get their own games in order. And you know, signing a big free agent or two because you have cap space doesn't change that. It doesn't change that you still have too many underperforming players making a lot of money. And how you navigate around it, maybe it helps other teams take on money if you're going to add a draft pick, but they don't seem to like to do that, and I understand why. They're in a tight spot, and the Cardinals are in a similar spot except with a much more open-ended thing, right? There's no cap. They will have the money to spend when they choose to spend it, but they're both kind of stuck in that middle ground for the moment.
Yeah, I do think now the cap thing changes it a little bit, but I do think there's a more obvious path forward to get out from the middle or move to the front for a team in Major League Baseball than there is for a team in the NHL.
All right, buddy. Well, enjoy the evening down. I know you'll be watching the Billikens like the rest of us and obviously flipping around because, well, that's what we sports guys do. Have a good night and a good weekend, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks. Someday I need you, baby. Don't tell me like that.
Listen, Eddie, can you... All right, it's DGS on a Friday. Obviously, the three of us here, Rachel, Andrew, me. I don't sound like Dave. I don't feel like I need to say my name when I'm talking anymore, right?
Dave's voice has gotten a little different these days.
Yeah.
Agro Dave.
Yeah. Everybody can be like, that's not Dave. Dave will be back on Monday, and looking forward to that, obviously. When we have the band all together, it's pretty cool.
It's fun.
Like, it's a good, every day is a good day, even the bad days are good days. Although, I got to be honest with you guys. I think I'm weird.
Why is that?
Because I don't ever feel like it's a bad day on the show.
Yeah, you know what? I agree. I was just talking to Kurt the other day, and I was like, look, we have segments that are not so great.
I say things that are dumb all the time. But
but it's very, very rarely that I'm like, that was bad. You know what I mean? So I agree with you, Wheels. You got a good thing going.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not going to sprain my shoulder patting the whole show on the back. But I do think though that the fact that you think critically about what you're doing is good because then you don't let things slide.
Yeah,
and that's what I like about what we do as well is when you're always checking yourself, you don't need to be checked by anybody else. You don't have to worry about that slide.
Yeah, most of my most critical moments about the show are usually like in regards to myself.
Same here. Well, I think that's all of us, right? Like, I mean, like everybody's critical of themselves, which is good. I feel like I should be my own harshest critic in all things. And, you know, Matt and I, you know, Matt Pauly and I, we were just talking, obviously, a lot of Cardinals and Blues. I always feel this way in sports, and I wonder if you guys do with the things that you're passionate about, that you're more critical about the things you care about. Like, I get that from fandoms, right? The Marvel fandom or the Star Wars fandom. They're hypercritical of this thing that they love, but it's because they love it.
Yeah.
And it's maybe better to be that than be the one that's critical of other things that are not really relevant to it and just kind of pretending that everything you love is perfectly fine, everything's good.
Yeah.
I do think we go over the top, though. Like, we're all sometimes too critical of ourselves or too critical of our favorite fandom. You know, Andrew's over here ranting during the show, before the show, about how horrible things have gotten in the Magic the Gathering world.
There,
no, he hasn't.
Yeah.
I totally made that up.
Yeah, there's an, listen, there's enough troubling opinions from certain angles that I want to nip that in the bud.
What would be a problem in that world? Would it just be people
too much magic
being jerks?
That is 100. Rachel is actually 100% correct. Too much magic. That is the general consensus. Is that there are too many products that are releasing too quickly now.
I get you. Yeah, yeah.
It is. So Hasbro owns Wizards of the Coast, who makes Magic the Gathering, and just about the only thing Hasbro has that makes any money
is
Magic the Gathering.
Okay.
And so.
So it's just like Marvel.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, an enormous burden is placed upon the game to make lots and lots of money and always continuously be making more and more money as much as possible. And that can get a little exhausting for the people who follow it.
I don't think it's any different in, you know, the movie industry when we see all of these superhero reboots and, you know, hey, we're going to start a whole new Marvel universe after the last universe was saved, kind of. You know, like, I understand. This is in sports, too. It's where people get, for the sports example would be, oh, my God, you're putting ads on uniforms. Do you not have enough? It's always more. I get that. I think that's what ends up taking all of the things that people love and making you get sick of them a little bit.